Welcome to our inaugural podcast on AYA Oncology for the Big Ten Cancer Research Consortium. I'm here today with Dr. Michael E. Roth from MD Anderson, who has many roles at his institution and nationally with AYA work. Thanks for joining us, Mike. I'm happy you can be here.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Always a pleasure to talk with you, especially about AYA efforts.
Perfect. Hey, since this is our inaugural podcast on AYA, there may be people out there who don't understand what that means. Let's start with just explaining to the listener what AYA Oncology is.
Sure. So AYA stands for Adolescents and Young Adults. Depending on where you are in the world, that means different things to different people. Specifically in the United States, we use sort of the National Cancer Institute definition of an AYA, which typically refers to someone who's diagnosed with cancer between the ages of 15 and 39 years of age. And the reason that's so relevant and important is that there's a lot of attention focused on younger children diagnosed with cancer. There are many, many older adults diagnosed with cancer. And often those patients in between those two age groups, they kind of get left behind and their needs get left behind. So really important that we have a focus on improving care and outcomes for this group.
Left behind. Let me lift up on that comment. What's getting left behind in this patient population?
Really, a lot's being left behind. It's health outcomes, it's quality of life, it's access to care, access to clinical trials. It's supporting folks wherever they are in their lives and goals for, you know, family planning and life milestones. So I'm hoping we've got a few hours to talk about this on this podcast. But if not, if it goes well, hopefully I get invited back.
Well, if this can be used as a sleep tool, then yes. Otherwise, let's try and keep it to 20, 30 minutes.
We'll have
hopefully lots of other podcasts and we can go into details on all of those subjects that you had mentioned. But based on what you know and your experience, why do you think this has happened? How did we get here?
Yeah, I think the big challenge is if we all think back to when we were AYAs, when we were an adolescent or a young adult, life is challenging. Life is challenging without having cancer. And then you add a cancer diagnosis onto a stage in life when you're changing, you're gaining independence, you're trying to start your careers, grow a family. Cancer interrupts all of that. And for years, folks really haven't taken into account how a cancer diagnosis impacts people's lives, impacts their finances. And that just layers onto the challenges, which we haven't mentioned yet, of cancer biology and, you know, how there are just many disparities in survival and outcomes. So only recently in the past couple of decades have we really focused on the AYA population as being a group that faces disparities globally. And then as you dive deeper within the population, there are groups and subgroups that face even more challenges than just the broader population. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned disparities, and then we're going to run with that. You know, and all of the data that you've been reviewing and the studies that you've been involved in, can you give an example of what you think would be a highlight for why, what kind of disparity are you talking about? Outcomes, survival, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because there's different disparities that exist, whether it's related to survival based on the location of care. So we know that for AYAs, if they are seen at a larger academic site, they're more likely to have better survival outcomes compared to if they're seen at a community site. And we still don't really understand the reasons why behind some of those survival disparities. There's disparities in access to clinical trials. Few AYAs ever are offered or enroll on a clinical trial and get access to new agents. And then there's a really large disparity in terms of survivorship care. And I think something I don't want to get lost on this podcast here is that we've actually made a lot of progress. So 5-year overall survival for AYAs is over 85%. And we have a commitment to caring for these patients for the rest of their lives, because you can imagine someone diagnosed at 20, 25, 30, they can have 5 or 6 decades of life after their diagnosis. And the treatments we give them are often fairly toxic. And most patients never get any survivorship-directed care.
Okay. So you have multiple roles at your institution. You direct the AYA program, you direct the survivorship program. And you're doing something at a national level. Can you tell this audience what is going on at a national level with regards to AYA oncology?
Sure, there's a ton of movement. For me, it's a real privilege to be at MD Anderson, a large institution, which is fortunate to have a lot of resources. We have a very large AYA population. We see about 2,000 AYAs within our AYA program alone each year. At the national level, we've gotten a lot of support in the past decade or so. And what I mean by that is really thinking about clinical trials and awareness. So on the clinical trial level, it used to be historically that the pediatric group, the children's oncology group, would do their own trials for patients, typically up to age 18 or so. And then the adult groups would do their trials starting at about age 18. And what we realized was that this was slowing progress down. By not working together, by not having pediatric and medical oncology collaborate, we were essentially doing trials in parallel and then sequentially and delaying progress. So now what we've been able to do over the past decade is actually develop collaborative clinical trials where patients who are age 12 can be on the same trial as someone who's age 35 and get access to those new agents, and we get an answer much quicker as to whether those agents work. And there's great examples. The most recent one is a Hodgkin lymphoma trial where we very quickly evaluated a comparison of two novel agents to see which is better in terms of survival outcomes, layering on quality of life outcomes, which are still to be determined.
Got it. Now, what does it take to make this happen? You said historically you have these two separate groups, but there's kind of an overlap with some of these types of cancer where both a pediatric oncologist and a medical oncologist might be seeing. At an institutional level, how do you make those two pieces work effectively together?
Yeah, it's a much more difficult question than sort of said, and folks have worked for many, many years trying to figure that out. In my experience, most of AYA work and making progress for AYAs comes down to two things: trust and relationships. It's really about working together across silos to do what's best for AYAs. At an institutional level, it's a commitment to say we have a population of young people who face challenges in their lives, challenges accessing care. What do we need to do to make sure that all of our patients have access to high-quality cancer-directed care, as well as top-quality supportive and survivorship care? It's easy to say. It takes a lot of hard work, commitment, and dedication, as well as leadership support to actually do this well.
I forgot to mention at the beginning, so this will be the midpoint to introduce myself. I am hosting this AYA podcast. My name is David Dickens. I've been a pediatric oncologist for 21 years, 7 months, and 23 days. And I've been at the University of Iowa for almost exactly 5 years of that time. So I know all about silos. I think you must be in a position to be talking to a lot of different institutions. And when you work for these institutions, you almost have the people existing already if you were a new person, and that's what you have to work with. And there might be some variance from institution to institution about how do you collaborate effectively. What advice would you give to a pediatric oncologist who's meeting some kind of resistance at any of the levels that you mentioned, a leadership level, the other oncology silo? How do you effectively bridge that gap when it's maybe more difficult?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure if you're trying to stump me or this is the sort of the list of questions we agreed to, which we really didn't agree to any questions before this conversation. So there's always going to be challenges, and I think those challenges will exist in any setting. There's financial constraints, there's other constraints in terms of historical politics, within and across institutions. I think at the end of the day, you have to decide what's best for patients, and you need to find champions across your institution as well as across the country. I love what you guys are doing within the Big Ten AYA network here, the research consortium. You guys have wonderful champions across your sites, and you're leveraging a group of institutions that historically both have worked well together and competed against each other. there is a common bond, there's a common goal, and as long as you can reach consensus on some of those, that common mission of what you want to achieve, I will say low-hanging fruit always matters. Get some early wins, some early easy wins, and show the value to your leadership, show the value to your institutions. Always trying to decrease the burden and add value is sort of my approach wherever I've been. It's, we are here to add to the care that you are already giving for these patients within your walls, within your institutions, and we're not going to ask other providers to do more. We're going to figure out how to support those patients and how to support your providers. Again, this is years of work, not hours, but it's well worth it.
Well, I am not surprised to hear you be able to improvise my questions. And I was hoping to dig into that level because I do know from talking with colleagues that that challenge exists. It really sounds ideal, but hopefully people can rewind what you just said, your last comment, to really be able to effectively present to leadership and to the colleagues across the other oncology practices to explain what this is about. I think that was perfect. Since you expanded out into the Big Ten, let me take a minute to just explain to the audience what we have going on here. And by the audience, I probably mean your mother, maybe your wife, two, three.
My kids as well, yeah.
Oh, they deserve it. Make them listen to their pops. So the Big Ten is really the Big 14, soon to be, if not already this year, the Big 18. Major institutions who are already collaborating on adult oncology spaces. So the concept that we can take the needs of the AYA patient and collaborate across different institutions was already there. And this AYA consortium is disease agnostic, meaning a lot of other smaller consortiums focus on brain tumors or leukemia. And we've offered the opportunity from each member institution to present an idea in whatever space a young investigator might be looking for a little room to develop their idea, seed some early clinical trial designs and get it a little off the ground to present at the national level. That's exactly what we have an opportunity for. We have tremendous community support, the Big Ten network of fans and alumni, scientists, clinicians. It's just absolutely enormous. Just in our local community, we have some huge community support led by families. One publicly has been the McCaffrey family, Fran McCaffrey, Margaret McCaffrey, head coach of the men's basketball team. I did point out they recently had a fundraiser and they were able to raise $130,000 for a program. Margaret presented the check at the first time out, and that correlated with the men's basketball team actually winning the game. So I said, if you keep giving us $100,000 a game, you're sure to reach the top of the Big Ten. She did not make any promises. But the point being, you know, in addition to all of the internal support that you're describing, the community that's affected, the patients, their families, in my experience, has been really critical because a lot of those extras that you describe are important for caring for a person with cancer aren't financially reimbursed by insurance. They're just things we know are good. And so we're highly dependent upon a generous community to make it work.
Yeah, I agree. It always starts with the patients and the community. When I first came to MD Anderson in 2017, our goal was to develop an AYA program. And essentially what we did is we went to our Young Adult Advisory Council, which is made up of mostly young adult cancer patients and survivors, as well as some leadership from the institution. And we said, what do you need in an AYA program? And it was their support and guidance every step of the way, which is, you know, led to us building a very large and effective program, both from the clinical side, as well as all of the programming behind the scenes in terms of cancer doesn't stop when you leave the walls of your cancer institution, your cancer care providers. If anything, some of the anxiety and psychosocial distress and challenges are amplified as you go back home and deal with life's challenges. So everything is centered around what do patients need, what do they want, and oftentimes we were finding as providers, and despite the fact that I've been doing this for a while, I would come to the young adult advisory clinic and say, oh, you know, we're sort of building a clinic space, we assume you want this, and they would say, yeah, you're completely wrong, we actually, you know, think we need this, and this would be better, and that has been our guide for, you know, everything that we do here. We leverage the Council for Research focus groups to guide what's relevant and meaningful to you. How do we actually do research better that is more impactful and that you're willing to engage in? So again, everything comes back to the patient. And I love what you guys are doing and focusing on how do we get the community more involved to support these efforts in a disease agnostic way, because there are so many needs across the population.
Sure. And the needs are independent of zip codes, aren't they? Like, we friendly compete with our colleagues at different institutions. We wear different badges, but we have the same cause. And the issues that are faced for an AYA patient in Iowa is the same as Michigan and the same as Texas. But with the variances that you described, there are also a source of disparities across a lot of different age groups, which is socioeconomic disparities and other healthcare related issues that might affect a patient adversely. So listen, two more questions, Mike, but it could
well,
be...
Can I jump in real quick, Dave?
One
quick thing. So, you know, understanding the differences in geography and where we care for patients, if the Iowa men's or women's basketball team wants to support the MD Anderson AYA program, please, you know, we would be happy to help their win rate as well. I'm sure we would be able to show their win rate increases with support for our program as well. But, you know, joking aside, we need those community supports. We need our sports teams, our alumni to really engage and you know, join this mission, because you can't do this alone. You can't do this without that support. So yeah, thanks. And again, thanks to the folks supporting all the programs across the country. It's meaningful.
Great. Thank you. So your remaining two questions, which could be one if you answer it cleverly enough. Talk to me about where do we go from here? The future of AYA oncology / what's getting you excited about this field?
Two things, and these are two big buckets, but the first thing is on the clinical trial side of things. We are in sort of the golden age of AYA cancer clinical trials. The portfolio of cancer-directed clinical trials that are across the age spectrum from 8 to 50 or 12 to 40, it has grown tremendously in the past decade, and I think we're going to see over the next 5 to 10 years a rapid increase in both the number of trials as well as the return of results, and being a little bit more nimble in terms of making changes to our treatment approaches and identifying the best treatment for different AYA populations. To that extent, I think where we need to go and where we're going is the supportive care clinical trials. So we have a couple really exciting AYA supportive care clinical trials. One that is focused on decreasing toxicity to the liver for AYAs with acute lymphoblastic leukemia with ALL. So that is really exciting. That's launched, that's up and running. There's another trial which is focused on ovarian reserve. So making sure that our patients can preserve and protect their fertility throughout treatment. So that's the next stage of AYA clinical trials. I think the other big area is at the national level and gaining support from key folks, whether it be in government or other advocacy groups. We need a national movement in AYA oncology. We know what we do is important. We know what we do is meaningful. There are over 90,000 AYAs diagnosed with cancer each year, and that does not include the number of patients who have their disease recur and have to get additional treatment. To a large extent, AYA oncology in the field of AYA oncology is still small, and it's still not a known entity across the country. So things like the White House Cancer Moonshot, getting more attention at the NCI, getting more attention within our National Clinical Trials Group, having the Big Ten AYA Research Consortium assemble and grow and expand, all of these efforts help move the needle. And I do think in the next 2 to 3 years, We're going to be hearing a lot more about AYA oncology, hopefully get a lot more support to advance the science and advance the support across the country for our patients.
Great. So what I'm hearing you say is we are doing reasonably well if you look at cure rates alone in AYA patients relative to some other age groups as a whole. However, the work isn't done because
Agreed.
of the toxicity mentally, psychologically, physically that the treatments take.
Yeah.
And we're ignoring the 15% that don't make it.
Agree. Yeah, we have to focus on the populations where clearly our survival is not good enough. And you know, we would both say survival is not good enough until you reach 100% for anyone population. And we have to acknowledge the fact that these patients are young. They have their whole futures ahead of them. The quality of that life matters. It matters to the patients, it matters to their families. We need to not just focus on cures, we need to focus on cures and quality of life during and after treatment. And I think that's where we go, that's where we're moving towards. Lots more work to do, and hopefully, you know, whoever's listening to this podcast wants to join and really support and collaborate in this mission.
Right. So we need progress, and the progress is going to be proportional to the research, clinical trial research, basic science research. And
Completely.
the research is going to be proportionate to the investment.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the figure in my head with the arrows sort of, you know, going back
Yeah.
and forth, like the bench to bedside and then, you know, back to the bench as well. Yeah, we need that for AYA oncology, and we're getting there. We're making progress. Hopefully that progress increases in speed.
We have an interesting job, Michael E. Roth. We get to see the worst and the best out of humanity. We are probably one of the few professions that is looking to put ourselves out of business. But you and I will happily maybe start a podcast or do anything else other than continue to have to do the things that we do on a daily basis. I thank you for doing what you do. Your patients are lucky to have you. The impact that you have on the community at large is lucky to have you. And I wish you many years of success and good health for you and your family.
Yeah, thanks, Dave, and thanks to all the work that you're doing. Hopefully, I'll be invited back and we can share progress together.
That would be great. Thanks for listening. Thank you for taking your time, Dr. Roth, and we will be in touch.
Perfect.